Support for the Exchange podcast from NHPR comes from you, our subscribers,
and from the law firm of Primer, Piper, Eggleston, and Kramer, providing comprehensive legal counsel to New Hampshire businesses and their owners for more than 30 years. For more information or to speak to an attorney, visit primer.com. And from the New Hampshire Department of Agriculture, Markets, and Food. New Hampshire's farms and farmers markets are full of fresh goods, rich with agricultural heritage, and available all year long. You can locate pick-your-own-farms, farmers markets, fairs, and more near you using the directories at visitnh.gov/agriculture.
From New Hampshire Public Radio, I'm Laura Kanoy, and this is The Exchange. We here on The Exchange have produced many shows about hiking, especially in New Hampshire's White Mountains with its 4,000 footers, its location along the Appalachian Trail, and its famous Mount Washington. But what if you're not up for a major excursion? Maybe you're not physically able, or you have little children, or you just want some exercise and fresh air without a big investment in preparation or time. Well, today in The Exchange, this show is for you. We're talking about laid-back hiking, no matter where you live in the state. And let's hear from you, your questions, or your advice on great casual hikes near you. Our email, exchange@nhpr.org. Once again, exchange@nhpr.org. Respond on Facebook or Twitter at NHPR Exchange, or give us a call, 1-800-892-6477. We have three guests in studio. Mike Dickerman is here, a hiking enthusiast, one of the co-authors of The 4,000 Footers of the White Mountains, and former co-editor of the AMC White Mountain Guide. And Mike, thank you for coming in. Nice to see you.
Always nice to be here, Laura.
Also with us, Lindsay Valancourt. She blogs about hiking with her daughter at Adventures with Aubrey. She's also an ambassador for the Women Who Hike NH and Hike It Baby. And Lindsay, nice to meet you. Thank you for being here.
Thanks for having me.
Also with us, Emma Toutine, conservation field specialist with UNH Cooperative Extension, one of several partner organizations behind the Trail Finder website, which we'll talk about. Emma, thank you for being here. I really appreciate it.
Thank you. It's my pleasure.
Well, Lindsay, I want to start with you. How did having your daughter, Aubrey, she's five now, how did that change your whole thinking about what it means to go for a hike?
Well, I wasn't a big hiker before she was born. This was something that I just decided to do after she was born. So it was a whole learning curve on what I needed to pack and what I can even do with a child. And it was a very hard journey at first because I didn't quite know anything.
I see. So you didn't come at this as an experienced hiker.
No, not at all.
This is something you started doing after you had your daughter to just kind of get out.
Yes.
Get out of the house.
She was a very busy baby, nonstop, and the only way I could soothe her was in a carrier. So I just started picking out little trails here and there and attempting smaller mountains as I could. And sometimes I couldn't even get to the top of those mountains.
And that's okay.
Yeah. You just turn around and you go back and you try again another day.
Mike, what are those times when you just don't want to or you can't, you know, the time, the energy, maybe you're recovering from an injury? Describe those times, Mike, when you just don't want to bump your way up a 4,000 footer.
The older I get, that's more frequent for me, actually. age has something to do with it, certainly. Yeah, some days you just don't, you're just not up to it. Or as a businessman who works for myself, my time is very limited. So I really don't have a whole day's to take off to do a 4,000 footer anymore. So I get my joy out of doing a half-day hike or even just an hour or two hike. The local conservation commission has some trails in Littleton where I'm from. I can run up the trails in an hour, a five-minute drive from my house. So that's what you do. I mean, there's plenty of opportunities, whether you're in the White Mountains or in the Monadnock region on the seacoast. There's plenty of places all over the state where you can find that little half-hour window that you have. Get out into the woods, just enjoy some quiet time, hopefully, and just be outdoors.
Well, I'm glad you mentioned those local resources, Mike, because I want people to really check out our website today. Lots of great articles, links, resources about hiking that's less ambitious than Mount Washington, for example. It's nhpr.org/exchange. Once again, nhpr.org/exchange. Emma, how about you? What are those times when you just don't really feel like going for a big one?
Sure. Well, I have an almost one-year-old, so I'm in that learning curve that Lindsay described. And, you know, it's every day after work when you don't have time to take a 2-hour drive. I live on the seacoast. So getting to some of those more ambitious hikes, it's a real investment of time. So it's really nice to just be able to go in my own backyard and go for a hike somewhere local.
Well, and parents of 2 young children here today. So we'll get lots of thinking on that. Again, our number here in the exchange for you to join us is 1-800-892-6477. 1-800-892-NHPR. You can send us an email too, exchange@nhpr.org. Mike, you first, but I want to hear from everybody. You've written all sorts of guidebooks, and there are so many for the White Mountains. You've written a couple of these yourself. Mm-hmm. How much encouragement and resources and information do you see out there, Mike, for these non-major hikes?
Oh, I think the guidebooks cover them. There's a multitude of guidebooks. I brought a bunch in here to the studio this morning, especially since we're with Lindsay and Emma here, Best Hikes with Kids, Maine, New Hampshire, Vermont, Southern New Hampshire guy. There's another book, Outdoors with Kids, Maine, New Hampshire, Vermont. They give great ideas of hikes, especially for, you know, the people that aren't peak bagging, going for those high, the high peaks, the Mount Washingtons or Lafayette, Lincoln, place like that. So there's a lot. I think there are a lot of resources. And online, there's just a ton of resources no matter where you go. That's where I would go first. And I think that's the online hiking community is huge. It's created a logjam at a lot of the major trailheads. But you can get some ideas, I think, online and through these guidebooks of places to go that aren't as frequented as some of the 4,000-footers. And to me, as I get older, I like the little quiet, a little less crowds. So I'm always searching out those places that, you know, a little bit off the beaten path. And frequently, those are the trails that aren't going up to high peaks.
Now, that's interesting, too. You said as you get older, sometimes you don't have the energy, or maybe you're recovering from a knee problem or something. Maybe older folks should also look in the Hiking with Kids
Absolutely.
Section of the bookstore for those ideas
it's
of
funny
easier hikes.
My publishing company, which I have in Littleton, we published a book about a dozen years ago called The Old Codger's Guide to Hiking and Climbing in the White Mountains. And it was a book geared toward the senior crowd. It lists about 20 different hikes in the White Mountains that were appropriate. Some a little more difficult than others, but basically it was just geared toward the older crowd. And for some reason, I forgot to even bring that book with me today. But that's a great book. So there are definitely a lot of resources out there.
Give us the title again.
Old Codger's Guide to Hiking and Climbing in the White Mountains.
All right, great. What do you think, Lindsay, you've been involved actually in creating some of these resources mm-hmm. for people who, again, either are just getting started or who just don't have the time or energy to do something major?
Well, like on my website, I created a whole interactive trail guide that you can look at a map and click where you want to go. And on that, I've written descriptions of what the trail's like in a kid's eyes. You know, a lot of the times they're written for adults. So I've added, you know, the kid sense, and then also like other things to do in the area for kids. Where's the local playground? Where's the local ice cream place? You know, maybe a children's museum nearby. So parents can see that, oh, here's a hike and we can go do this too at the same time, you know, and kind of start to, you know what to expect on a trail for a child. You know, some of these easy trails are not easy for a 3 to 5-year-old or a 7-year-old, depending on where they're at in their hiking.
Well, and something I discovered when I was first taking my kids hiking was, you know, when you're an adult, you think it's a hard hike, but there's an awesome view at the top. And I learned pretty quickly, kids don't really care about views. They like waterfalls.
Exactly. Waterfalls, bog boards, bridges. Like, there's times we've gone back and forth over the same bridge 6 or 7 times because it's fun to run across the bridge.
Right.
So finding that kind of trail. Ladders. Sugarloaf up in the White Mountains has a great one with a couple ladders that are really fun for kids just to climb up and down.
Fire towers.
Go
ahead, Mike.
The frogs and the salamanders that you might run into across the trail. Kids are fascinated by stuff like that.
Yeah. Takes you a while to get to the top, but that's not what it's about for them.
Patience.
That's not
what
it's about.
You have to have a lot of patience.
Yeah. Love to hear from you too, Emma, on this.
Sure, on resources, well, the TrailFinder website, that's really what it's all about, is just making it easy for people to find trails. Our experience was that here in New Hampshire, we have so many different conservation landowners with over 40 land trusts and that all own land with trails, and most towns own land with trails. It's really hard for people to know where to go to find a trail map, and most people just aren't comfortable just heading out into the woods without a little information ahead of time. So people like to know, where can I park? You know, and are there bathrooms? What are the facilities like? And so the goal of that, of our website, is really to make it easy for people to get outside and find trails.
So we have a link on our website to the Trail Finder website, but I was playing with it on Friday, and it's really interesting. Tell us a little bit about how it works, Emma.
Sure. So the website is trailfinder.info, and we're it includes trails in New Hampshire and Vermont. We're still adding trails in New Hampshire, so you'll see Vermont has a lot more trails right now, but we're adding new trails all the time. And you can go in there and search trails by a variety of what we call trail adventures. And so you can look for example, family-friendly hikes, fire towers, something else kids might be into, pet-friendly hikes, wheelchair accessible. So there's a lot of different ways you can search hikes. You can also just look at the map and find hikes that are close to you. So there's a lot of different ways to sort of look through and filter through all those hikes that are on there.
Well, and I appreciate what you're saying, too. You don't want to park in somebody's backyard by mistake.
Yeah.
You don't want to bring your dog on a hike in a state park, because dogs are not allowed in New Hampshire State Park. So there's a lot to think about.
And that's one thing that sort of sets this website apart from other existing trail websites. Some of those websites, any person with a GPS can just go out for a hike, GPS the trail, and upload that information to the website. On Trail Finder, we're only posting information where we're getting that data from the landowner or the trail manager. So people using the website can rest assured that these are trails that they're allowed to be on. The trails, the trail maps are generally, they should be up to date and accurate. So the information is really trustworthy. So that's really what sets our website apart.
Again, there's a link to it on our website, nhpr.org/exchange. And we're taking your questions and comments about what we're calling laid-back hiking, casual hiking, no matter where you live in the state. We'd love your questions or your advice on great casual hikes near you. Our email, exchange@nhpr.org. Our phone number, 1-800-892-6477. Leah sent us an email that I'd love to share with you. She says, how do you go hiking with a young child, 1 year old, and protect against ticks? I'm worried about ticks or missing a tick on a post-hike tick check. It creates a barrier to getting out in the woods with my daughter because it seems like too much of a hassle. Leah, sadly, there's probably a lot of people who have that same concern. Mike, what do you think?
Well, one thing I say, stay on the trails. Don't go off into the grass. I made that mistake a few years ago when I was doing some research for the White Mountain Guide. I was going on a trail. It was basically an old logging road, and I was fine. But I stepped off the trail to get a view in this open meadow, and I came back out, and my socks had about 50 ticks on them.
No, really?
That was my first encounter with ticks. I was like, wow, stay on the trail. Don't go bushwhacking. Keep your kids on the trail. I think that's really an important part, because most of the trails, you know, they're well marked. They're well worn. So you're not, you know, the ticks are usually hanging around in the tall grass, things like that. Why don't you stay on the trail? I think you're pretty much okay.
Lindsay?
So coming from a parent who's had a daughter with Lyme disease, Aubrey had Lyme disease when she was two.
Oh, my goodness.
I am obsessive over ticks and tick checks. And a big thing is get a good chemical. You know, your essential oils aren't going to deter ticks. You got to get something with Picardin, Permethrin, you know, something DEET. And use it. It's safe for children up, you know, above 6 months, I believe. And then just tick checks. A really good way to find ticks is one of those lint rollers like you would use for your shirt or your, you know, couch to pick up dog hair. Roll over all your clothing, your socks, and make sure you hit all the spots. And that will pick up a lot of the ticks. And then every night before bed, make sure you're looking again for more ticks.
Well, I really appreciate the email, Leah. And we talked earlier about, you know, for kids, it's not necessarily about the view at the top. It's about the fun stuff along the way, the stream, the bridge. I remember, and Lindsay, I'd love to hear from you on this, when my guys were little, they loved to climb big boulders that you find. So that does require getting off the trail. Sometimes getting off the trail a little bit is what's fun for kids.
Right. You know, it is. It's a hard place where you figure out where it's most acceptable and where it's not.
Yeah, if you make it too strict, it's no fun. It's just
right.
Like being at
You're
home.
You're going to kind of be free.
Right.
You know, and that's where you amp up your tick checks after, you know, if you've wandered off a little bit, you do a little check right before, you know, you get back hiking and, you know, you just keep a better eye on it.
What do you think, Emma?
Yeah, I think we're always weighing the risks when we're out in nature. But I think, you know, it's been shown time and time again, especially for kids, time in nature is really important. And so, you know, for me, it's worth the risk and I'm just going to put in the extra effort to check And I think the tips that Mike and Lindsay have given us are really good. So, yeah.
Well, you have a one-year-old, so
yeah.
it's a daughter, right?
Yeah.
She's
yeah.
in your backpack, I'm assuming.
Yeah.
She's not walking up the trail.
So if I'm carrying her in my backpack, then I'm really treating my own clothes if I'm going out. And certainly in the seacoast, ticks are everywhere. So I'm often doing tick checks at the end of the day. You know, I put those chemicals on my hiking gear. You can buy clothes with it already in the
permethrin treated.
Yep. So there's a lot of ways, and you know, even though it looks pretty silly, tucking your pants into your socks or wearing rubber boots are ways that really help keep ticks sort of on top of your clothes. They're easier to find and pick off right away. So it's just being vigilant, and it does add an extra step into your hike, but it's really important. But I think, you know, I'd encourage people to just take those steps, and it is worth it to get the time outside.
All right. Well, Leah, thank you so much for the email. Eric sent us one. He says, for people living in Manchester, an excellent hike is the Hackett Hill Center Swamp, owned by the Nature Conservancy. Very unique ecosystem in the state. And in late June, early July, you will find wild rhododendrons in bloom. Eric, sounds lovely. Thank you so much. And I'm glad he sent us that note, because I wanted to ask all of you, and maybe you first, Emma, how good a job do you think cities and towns have done leveraging local natural resources like the one that Eric tells us about?
Yeah, I think more and more towns and cities have been realizing the power of leveraging natural resources for their economy and for the quality of life in their communities. And at Cooperative Extension, we're doing a lot of work actually to help towns connect their downtowns with their trail systems. So those are some of my colleagues that are working on those projects. But I think more and more towns are realizing really the power of trails and how much people enjoy them and how they can use them to benefit their economies and the community.
So making your community more attractive. Everybody
yeah.
wants to have a vibrant workforce. So you think city officials are starting to get it, Emma? Because in some instances, when city officials talk about development, it seems like they are still talking about roads, getting people from A to B. The companies that want to build the roads
sure.
are the ones at the table. The people who walk their dogs, you know, maybe don't even know that the road is going to be paved over.
Yeah, sure. I'm of course, it's going to be variable across the state in every town. And but you know, working with conservation commissions across the state, you know, really finding a real interest in trails and conservation land and making sure that people, once they've conserved land, making sure that people in that town who maybe contributed to financially to getting that land protected, making sure that they know where that land is and that there's trails for them to use and that they can really benefit from those resources.
Make the case, if you were, Lindsay, you know, before the city council, for example, saying, hey, there's this open space. Let's see this as a tool of economic development.
I'm lucky in Ringe where they actually just utilized the Trail Finder guide, and they just did Trail Finder throughout the town for a couple of our trails. And I think they're working on a couple more, too. So it's nice that, you know, you can make the case for all these children. You need places for them to go play, grow up, develop, and not have to worry about a big building coming in. And, you know, you still need that open space for development.
How much do you think local officials get it, Mike?
In my case, up in Littleton, they really get it. We've developed over the last 10 years or so a nice river walk along the Amanuzic River, which, you know, flows right through, basically right behind downtown Main Street in Littleton. And they've and still in the process of developing it even further. But you can do a nice about a 3/4 or almost a mile long loop right along the river on a trail that they developed. There's also a lot of development going on in a place called Parker Mountain, which is more mountain biking, but it's a multi-use trail. That's being developed. Conservation Commission has 2 or 3 trails in town. So in Littleton, at least, and we're close to the mountains, they really get it. And people utilize these trails all the time.
All right. Coming up, we will talk more about casual hiking. We'll take more of your questions, like Leah's, about ticks, and your comments, like Eric's, about great places to hike in Manchester. We welcome your thoughts at 1-800-892-6477. Email exchange at nhpr.org. Use Facebook or Twitter at nhprexchange, and we'll be right back. This is The Exchange. I'm Laura Kanoy. Today, laid-back hiking when you can't or don't want to head out for a major excursion. We're talking about casual hikes in communities all around the state. And let's hear from you. 1-800-892-6477. Email exchange@nhpr.org. Once again, exchange@nhpr.org. With us in studio, Mike Dickerman, hiking enthusiast, co-author of the 4,000 Footers of the White Mountains and former co-editor of the AMC White Mountain Guide. Also with us, Emma Toutine, conservation field specialist with UNH Cooperative Extension. That's one of the partner organizations behind the Trail Finder website that Emma told us about a few minutes ago. And Lindsay Valancourt is here. She blogs about hiking with her daughter at Adventures with Aubrey. She's an ambassador for the Women Who Hike NH group and Hike It, Baby. Again, 1-800-892-6477 is our number. And all of you, let's take a call. And Steve's joining us from Nottingham. Hi, Steve. You're on the air. Welcome.
Good morning. This is what I do for a living. This sounds weird, but I am an information volunteer for the Appalachian Mountain Club. And my goal is when I'm at either like Crawford Notch, the Highland Center, or Pinkham Notch, or the High Huts, is when I see a family, my goal is for them to have an experience where the kids want to come back again. That's my whole goal. So people arrive at Pinkham Notch and say, oh, we want to do Mount Washington. You know, and it's 2 o'clock in the afternoon or something like that. And I can then point out to them, there are some lovely, easy hikes that the kids will enjoy around a Pinkham Notch, where they don't have to do the mountain, and they don't have to kill the kids.
Well, nobody wants to do that, Steve. We really appreciate it. What do you think, Mike?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, again, my time is short at times, so a lot of times I'm going through passing by Pinkham Notch, or maybe I'm stopping at the AMC Center there to drop off books or something like that, and I love to do a little hike. Right across from the lodge, there's a hike, 2 hikes. One's a square ledge, which is a fun little steep little scramble up to a nice rock ledge. Another one, Lost Pond, half a mile to the pond. It's a perfect for kids. It's just virtually, I think, 50 feet elevation gain. Mm. It's a perfect little hike, and those are the kinds of things I think you can get kids out or yourself when you want to take a break from driving or something like that. Just stretch your legs, Pinkham Notch, and they're all over the place, not just Pinkham Notch, all over the White Mountains, and I'm sure all across the state. These little places, just leg stretchers, I like to call them.
Oh, that's a good way to put it. That's your next book, Mike.
Yeah, there you
leg
go.
Leg stretchers, yeah. in New Hampshire. What do you think, Lindsay, about social media and sort of the pressure to have that perfect Instagram photo at the top of Mount Washington with your hardy kids? Does that sort of drive people to maybe overachieve with younger children?
I think it can. But then again, I'm also guilty of doing the Instagram and the Facebook of, you know, getting the pictures on top of these peaks.
I'm not putting that down.
Right,
I just wonder
right.
if it pushes people to do too much.
You know, I always try to make it. It's not an easy journey to get there. You know, there is a whole process to get to the top of that mountain, and even then, it can take you 6-7 hours. You know, to get up to the top, it's not this quick. Like, oh, we can do it in an hour. No, you gotta book for the time.
Do you post yourself next to the weeping child or bribing her with M&Ms and,
yes.
and so forth? You include
yes.
all that stuff,
There's
too.
There's lots of bribery.
Okay. Thank you so much for the call, Steve. I want to bring another voice into our conversation. With us now on the phone is Nancy Ritger. She's programs manager for the Appalachian Mountain Club's Hut System and Cardigan Lodge. And Nancy's been leading and managing AMC family programs in the Whites for 20 years. Nancy, really nice to have you. Thank you for your time.
Well, thank you very much.
How do you describe this concept, Nancy, of what we're calling laid-back hiking or casual hiking?
I think it's great. And your other guests have had some wonderful ideas about encouraging kids to get out and to enjoy the backcountry with their families. And I guess the only other thing I would add to that is that these are the future stewards of our land, and so what better opportunities to introduce them to a lot of adventures by just getting outside.
What are the challenges, Nancy, in getting people hiking in the first place? People who didn't grow up hiking, like the
sure.
kids that you just described, what barriers sure. do people have, sort of real or imagined?
Sure. There are a couple that are definitely worth considering, and obviously safety is one. Ticks have been mentioned, and sort of the barrier of people perceiving danger, and whether that is from an accident or a fall, and many of those things can just be managed with proper planning and taking into consideration the fact that kids don't necessarily want to go to the top of the peak, that they're much happier checking out a waterfall or playing in the river. So the other impediment that we see sometimes is equipment and people feeling as though they have to have a lot of fancy hiking apparel, and that really is not the case. As long as you have a good pair of sturdy shoes, you can certainly get out and enjoy the backcountry.
Yeah, so some of the pictures that you see, often the person is super buff and they've got all their fancy North Face, clothing on and so forth. And you're saying, Nancy, it really doesn't need to cost a lot of money, hardly anything.
No, exactly. As long as you have an extra layer, some extra food and some water, and then something to put it all in, you're usually good to go.
We've talked a fair bit about hiking with young children, and Lindsay has a 5-year-old, Emma has a 1-year-old. What would you say, Nancy, the challenges are for happy hiking with preteens and teenagers, especially when they really don't want to go?
Right.
Any strategies there?
Sure. What we've often done is to encourage them to bring a friend or to connect with another family. Teens really do enjoy having their peers and, often including them in the discussion as to where to go, letting them be the planners. That can also engage their interest. We also encourage, we have this program that we're working with called iNaturalist, where you can take photos of plants along the way, and that adds to a data set that is looking at the phenology, sort of when these plants are flowering and when they go to seed. So it engages not only teens, but obviously families, and just a whole nother aspect of getting out on the trail.
Well, this raises a question I wanted to ask everybody. So I think I'll throw it to you first, Emma, but please, everybody, jump in. Some people get outdoors to escape technology, to escape social media. But if the teenagers in your group, they have to have the phone in their pockets, how do you, Emma, incorporate that technology, that desire to be connected, to share, without pulling away from the nature experience?
Sure. I think there's a couple ways you could do that. I mean, one really simple way is like maybe set a scavenger hunt, a photo scavenger hunt, where they need to find, a list of things to take photos of while they're out on the trail. Something else that a lot of people are into is geocaching, and that's a great way to connect technology and nature. And actually on the Trailfinder website, when you're looking at a trail, there's a little link to local geocaches. So you can look at the trail and then sort of jump right from there to the geocaching website and find any local geocaches. And for those who aren't familiar with geocaching, and somebody else might be able to describe this better, but folks hide, a box in the woods, and there's a GPS location. And so it's a way to learn how to use GPS to find a location. And so you have to navigate there and find that box and then you record that you've been there. So people like to sort of collect, I think it's stamps at the boxes.
Various things.
Yeah, or sometimes people leave little trinkets. So you can kind of collect things. So it's a fun activity.
Nancy, what do you think about that question? Incorporating the desire for technology and social media among some hikers without taking away from the natural experience?
Exactly. I think there are some instances where it can enhance the experience. I usually recommend that it's not the focus of the experience, so that it can be used, as Emma had said, where, with a trail finder or Map My Hike or some of those other instances. Every kid and family is different, and the use of technology is different, and if it's going to enhance that experience, I'm all for it. But with a group, we tend to discourage it because it can be distracting.
What do you think, Mike?
Well, I'm an old school hiker. I'm about 60, so I was doing all my hiking before the digital age, so I don't carry any of that stuff with me. So it does distract from my experience when I go I'm on top of the summit and someone's up there calling their friend at home and say, I made it safe, which is fine. But it's just a different experience for an old fart like me to go out there. So I'm not comfortable with it, but I understand that's that's the way it is in this day and age. But you won't find me with taking photos on the summit with a digital camera or phone anyways.
Lindsay, what do you think?
I'm failing right now because I can't remember what it's called, but I know the New Hampshire Protection of the Forest Society, they have a new app out. I can't remember.
The Forest Explorer.
Yes, that's what it is. That you can use, like, there's Mount Major and there's another one that you can use it and you download the app and it will walk you through and it'll teach you about the forest and the mountain as you go on your hike. So that's another one that's really bringing in the digital aspect to hiking, but it's also educating at the same time.
So that's what that abandoned structure is. That's an old cellar hole.
Yes,
that's
exactly.
An old sheep farm. Go ahead, Mike.
One thing you have to consider, at least in the White Mountains, of course, you're not always going to have accessibility to phone. You're not going to get a signal. So a lot of times it's not going to work. It's one thing to be on top of a mountain. You can make a phone call. But sometimes you're in those hollows or in the deep valleys, you're not going to get a signal. So, you know, sometimes it's not 100% guaranteed that you're going to be able to use it.
I'm talking more about people taking a lot of pictures sharing and so forth. And, you know, that's kind of fun for folks to say, hey, I did it. But I was just wondering what you all thought about, you know, sort of blending the old school approach that you follow, Mike, and some of the new approaches.
I'm a map and compass guy.
You know, Nancy, I wanted to ask you about progressing to more challenging terrain. You talked about casual hiking and easier hiking. How do you, in your role with the Appalachian Mountain Club, leading family programs, how do you sort of judge and help people move on to something a little tougher?
Sure. Well, we spend some time helping them understand how important it is to make a plan and to start slow and easy. I think all of your guests have also mentioned that, taking into consideration the interests of the children and where they want to go with it. If they're really excited about, you know, climbing to a higher peak and getting a view, then making sure that you have the plan that can help get you there and to have it be a successful day so that they want to come back and do it again. I think the other thing I really encourage people to think about is being flexible. That, you know, if the weather changes, if the mood changes, if anything changes, just being willing to change your plan as well and not say, well, we said we were going to go to the waterfall and we're going to go, you know, to just make sure you keep it fun.
Well, and we've learned, and Mike, you and I have talked about this on the show before, even among experienced hikers, you need to be flexible. If bad weather comes in, you need to turn around. So let's take a call, and Christine's calling from Concord. Hi, Christine. You're on the air. Welcome.
Hi. How are you?
Good. Go ahead, Christine.
When the gentleman talked about all the hiking trails around Huckset, I live in Concord, and Concord has an extensive trail from East Concord to West End Trail. Very easy hike for little kids and for the elderly. And they go for quite many miles. I think one long trail can be, I think, upwards of 6 miles.
So go ahead, Christine.
Oh, sorry. I just got done a run. I'm a little winded.
Good for
you. So that's
all
I wanted to talk about. I mean, hiking in the White Mountains or Mount Monadnock are awesome. And my husband and I have done them with our children. But just easier hikes. Concord has a multitude.
Well, I'm so glad you called, Christine, because I did want to ask all of you. So maybe you first, Emma. What cities or towns, including cities like Concord, we had an email from Manchester, have sort of a reasonable amount of hiking, a surprising amount of hiking that you wouldn't think?
Well, the city of Concord certainly comes to mind, and all their trails are posted to Trailfinder. The city owns quite a bit of land with trails, and they're well mapped, and you know, that's a great example. And I think there are a lot of other towns that maybe on a smaller scale, Dover has a community trail. The city of Keene has a lot of trails. I mean, the list goes on. It's really hard to single anyone out because there's really a lot of towns with some amazing trails. But Concord sort of rises to my mind just because they recently posted all their trails to Trailfinder.
Sure. So when people think hiking in New Hampshire, they think the White Mountains, but there's plenty of hiking in even places like Manchester.
Yes.
Someone was telling me there's reasonable places to hike in the Nashua area, so places that you might not think. Thank you so much for the call, Christine. Nancy, last question. Are there AMC huts that are appropriate for these introductory hikes, or do you have to really plan a full-day excursion to reach a hut?
Oh, no, there are several. Lonesome Lake is a great 1.2-mile hike in, and you have a lake at the end and a hut. That's a real favorite with young families. Zeeland Falls is another one that's also easy to get to. That one is a little bit, has, you know, some uneven and rough rocky terrain towards the end, but a wonderful waterfall as a final viewpoint, as well as a hut. So those two in particular are very welcoming to young families and a great sort of, you know, as families are more comfortable in the woods, that those are wonderful hikes to get to.
Yeah, and it's fun when you're going with kids. They're hiking through the woods, it's starting to get crabby, and all of a sudden you see this really cool hut in the middle of the woods, and so
yeah.
That's a goal for them. Nancy, mm-hmm. Thank you for being with us.
Oh, thank you.
That's Nancy Ritger, Programs Manager for the Appalachian Mountain Club's Hut System, Cardigan Lodge. She's been leading and managing AMC Family Programs for 20 years. Again, our number 1-800-892-6477. Our email exchange at nhpr.org. Lindsay, I don't know if you want to jump in on what Emma was talking about a moment ago. Cities and big towns in New Hampshire that might have hiking that you wouldn't even think about.
One of my favorite places to go is local to me. It's Peterborough. There is a ton of hiking around the Peterborough area, from, you know, Packmanadnock, which will get you a good mountain, to Little Cranberry Meadow Bog Pond. That's a really fun trail, and that has some of the bigger boulders that kids can climb. And then there's the pond at the end with a little bench that you can sit out at, and there's blueberries there when they're in season.
Oh,
and,
perfect for kids.
You know, Peterborough has a ton of trails.
Yeah, and it's nice to hear from all three of you on this because Mike's in the White Mountains. Mm-hmm. You're over in the Monadnock mm-hmm. region, Lindsay, and Emma, you are on the seacoast. So it shows the variety of hiking available, even if you can't go to the White Mountains that day. Again, our number 1-800-892-6477. Lots of recommendations from our listeners. Gail says the Nature Discovery Center in Warner is across from the Indian Museum. The museum is geared toward children, but adults learn a lot too. There's a small hike on the property that's fun, benches where you can sit and have lunch or just meditate. Gail, thank you for that. Grace says our state is so fortunate to have a number of wonderful conservation organizations that post lists of trails available to the public that cross their conserved land. For instance, right in Concord, Five Rivers Conservation Trust, the Audubon Society, the Society for Protection of New Hampshire Forests have great trails open to the public, most that are owned by or conserved by those organizations through funds thoughtfully donated by people who know how important it is to have open land preserved. I wonder, Emma, if you can talk about the role that these very local conservation organizations play in making sure people do have local hikes.
Sure. I think I mentioned at the beginning of the show that New Hampshire is lucky to have over 40 land trusts in the state. So these are nonprofit organizations that work to conserve land really around the state, and they range from small, all-volunteer-run land trusts to statewide organizations like the Society for the Protection of New Hampshire Forests or the Nature Conservancy or New Hampshire Audubon. So there's really a ton of great organizations that work really hard to protect land for farming, for hiking, for recreation, and also just for ecological importance. So some places where we shouldn't go hike, where there aren't trails, but that are protected for other reasons.
All right. Thanks for those emails. We'll take more of your emails and calls after a short break. Again, our number 1-800-892-6477. Email exchange at nhpr.org. Join us as we talk about casual hiking in the Granite State. Our number 1-800-892-6477.
Frank from Concord turned his Mazda into Morning Edition.
Before this is NHPR News, I'm Rick Hanley.
Erica from Bristol turned her Toyota into Conversations with Terry.
This is Fresh Air. My guest, Emily Bazelon. She says, quote...
And Chris from Amherst turned his Ford into folk tunes.
A good Sunday evening to you and welcome to the Folk Show here at New Hampshire Public Radio.
Before you trade in your vehicle, consider the value it'll bring supporting your favorite programs on NHPR. Learn more at nhpr.org/car donation.
This is The Exchange. I'm Laura Kanoy. I'd like to invite Exchange listeners to a special live evening broadcast of our show on Tuesday, April 30th. The subject is education funding and will be live at 7 p.m. with an audience in our Concord studios. To find out more and to register for your free tickets, go to nhpr.org. So back to our conversation now about casual hiking in the Granite State. What to do if you don't have the time, energy, or physical ability to get yourself up a big mountain, but you still want to enjoy the great outdoors? That's what we're looking at this hour. Send us an email, exchange@nhpr.org. Use Facebook or Twitter at NHPR Exchange, or call in 1-800-892-6477. And Mike, Emma, and Lindsay, lots more questions and comments from our listeners. Andrew in Peterborough, which I think you just mentioned, Lindsay, says, what about urban hiking? Instead of driving everywhere in your town, why not get out of your car and walk about your town? You appreciate a lot more of your environment when you are walking, not driving in your car, plus getting exercise. Andrew, thank you so much. And this reflects a trend that I have seen a lot in New Hampshire. River walks and through the town walks. The trails in Keene are not all in the woods. Some of them are sort of right by town. And I think there's a fair enough. There's a river walk in Peterborough, right, Lindsay?
Yes,
a nice sort of concrete trail right by the river.
That's great for, you know, hiking, biking, dog walking, strollers. You know, that's always a big one that parents
sure.
are like, I don't want to carry my child and I want to push a stroller. Where can I do that? And those rails to trail systems are a great option for that.
Yeah, and wheelchairs. As people get older, maybe you have a loved one who's in a wheelchair. You can push the person in a wheelchair. I've also read about on the seacoast, Emma, instead of woodsy trails, blue trails where you're walking by the water.
Yeah. Yeah, there is a trend towards those river rock trails in a lot of towns in New Hampshire. A lot of towns are working on those right now. You know, and for people who work in towns, you know, they say that just 20 minutes outside can make a real impact on your mental health. So, you know, just being able to go somewhere and sit by a river or enjoy a little fresh air anytime during the day is a really valuable resource.
Yeah, it is a trend that you see communities connecting more to the river, realizing the economic benefits and sort of the social benefits for the town. Some cities like Concord, for example, got sort of cut off from the river. The highway's right there. So that's a struggle. Not everybody can do that. Did you want to jump in, Evan?
Yeah, I'll also mention on Trailfinder, we also have what we call our blue trails are actually water trails. So trails that are paddling trails instead of hiking trails. So something else to consider, you know, maybe for a little more advanced group. But those range from flat water paddling. You know, hopefully eventually we'll have some more involved paddle trails on our website. But, you know, that's something else towns are really looking to. I know the town of Franklin has really capitalized. They realized what a resource that river was for them. And they've really sort of drawn from that resource as well.
That's interesting. So that's an example of a city that has looked at both blue and green trails as a measure of economic development.
Yeah.
Instead of let's build an industrial park, let's, you know, create a new road so people can get to A to B as fast as possible.
Yeah. Yep.
All right. Blue trails, are those also on your Trailfinder website?
We have a couple right now. There aren't a lot, but I'm letting people know that that's an option if they have a trail that they're interested in getting on there. That's something we're open to.
Amy sent us a note from Derry. She says, rail trails work well for people who use wheelchairs and power chairs. Amy says, how do we find out about other, quote, hiking experiences for people with mobility issues? Amy, thank you so much for the question. Mike, do you want to jump in there?
Yeah, unfortunately, in the White Mountains, there aren't a whole lot of wheelchair accessible trails. There are a few, but there, you know, I contact the Forest Service, White Mountain National Forest, to get the idea of where they are. But that is an unfortunate part, at least in the Whites, because the terrain's a little just too tough for most of the trails. But there has been an effort over the last 15 years or so to develop some trails for the wheelchair folks, and. But it's a challenge to do that in the Whites, at least.
Well, through Franconia Notch, the trail right there is
paved. Yeah, the bike path,
paved.
The recreation path, right.
Very hilly, though, so I'm not quite sure how that would
there.
Work in a wheelchair.
Right, exactly.
I've sometimes struggled on my bicycle on some of those hills because it goes up and down. And some of the cities are really trying to make themselves more accessible for people in wheelchairs, with strollers. Concord has done a lot of work with the rebuilding of its downtown, I know, to make it easier for folks with disabilities to get around. Do you want to jump in, Emma?
Yeah, on TrailFinder, you can actually search by one of those trail adventures is wheelchair accessible. And so you can find trails. There are some scattered across the state. Again, we're adding more trails all the time, but some great examples up north. It's not the White Mountain National Forest, but Pondicherry Wildlife Refuge is a beautiful trail. If you're interested in birding or wildlife, it's a beautiful trail system. It's accessible.
Where is that? I had not heard of that.
It is in Jefferson. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. And it's a beautiful trail. In Sandwich, there's the Alice Bemis Thompson Wildlife Sanctuary. That's a New Hampshire Audubon property. Also, Boardwalk Trail with beautiful views of wetlands. Down in the seacoast, there's quite a few. The Oyster River Forest, which is a property owned by the town of Durham. And then in the Monadnock-ish region, in Alstead, there's Distant Hill Gardens, which is another great example. And Crotched Mountain is another. That one's not on TrailFinder yet, but that's a beautiful accessible trail with a view at the end. So there really are some great resources. It's not always easy to find where they are. So that, again, is one of our hopes in TrailFinder, is making it easier for people to find those opportunities.
Well, Amy, we really appreciate the question. It's an important topic, especially, as Mike said earlier, the population is aging. So, you know, more people just aren't going to be able to get out and go up Mount Washington for the day. So it's nice to know that there's places to go for them as well. Thank you so much, Amy. Let's go to Nashua, where Jeff is on the line. Hi, Jeff. Go ahead. You're on the air.
Hey, hi, Laura. Thank you for taking my call. How you
sure.
doing?
Good.
Okay, listen, I just wanted to make a comment, because we got some trails here in the Nashua area, which is right behind the mill yards. They start out there along the Nashua River and the canal, and they could take you all the way down as far as Mine Falls, and even into Hollis, and I heard in some cases you could follow the trails and it'll take you right to Pebble, Massachusetts.
Wow.
I'm not kidding, yeah. That's it, you know. I never went that far as Pepperell, but I went as far as Hollis and everything else, and it's a pretty good hike. You're talking like, if you decide to go the distance, you're talking about maybe 10, maybe 12 miles.
And what are the trails like, Jeff? Are they somewhat paved or gravel or woodsy?
It's more like dirt roads, stuff like that.
Yeah.
Part of it may be a little gravel. Part of it's gravel, you know, but some of it's just dirt roads and a trail, something like that. You get pathways that are, you know, along the canal and stuff like that. They interconnect. They weave in and out. And they usually, a lot of times, you can wind up at, like, where Mines Falls is, but I understand there's some trails there that could take you right in, follow along the Nashua River. They could take you into Hollis and, from what I hear, Pepperell, Massachusetts. So that's, you know, I've gone as far as Hollis, but.
How connected are they in the city?
They start out right behind the mill yards.
Behind the mill yards.
Behind the mill yards, you know, along Nashua River. They start there. You could just follow them.
They connect through the high schools, too?
I don't know if they connect toward the high schools. Maybe they do. I never tried it. I'm not sure, but I know they could take you as far as Hollis.
Okay, thank you very much for the call. Who knew? And we were talking earlier, Lindsay, about places like Manchester, Nashua, Portsmouth, where you might think not so much about the hiking, but here Jeff tells us, yeah, there is some hiking in Nashua.
There's lots of hiking where you don't suspect it, you know, and it might not be like that woodsy, rocky trail that you're expecting. It might just be a paved pathway, but it's there. You just got to look for it.
Here's an email from Peg in Waterville Valley who says, when our girls were 4 and 9, we climbed Mount Washington and made it a great adventure by hiking partway one day and staying at the AMC hut overnight, then summiting the next morning. We took our time, had plenty of M&Ms. I've done that, Peg. And included lots of breaks. At the top, I immediately went into the gift shop and bought T-shirts that said, "This body hiked Mount Washington," which thrilled the girls. Peg says, we used this plan for 2 other mountains and huts over the years. Now adult daughters still talk about those adventures. Full disclosure, on the Washington hike, the 4-year-old was fine until we started down and she saw the cog railway and realized there was a, quote, better way to hike. Thank you so much, Peg, for that. You know, Lindsay, I did want to ask you about this since it's kind of your specialty.
Yeah.
What do you need to bring physically and in terms of attitude when you hike with younger kids?
You always want to bring your tent essentials. You know, you can find that on the HikeSafe website, hikesafe.com. But the other big, big, big one is patience. You want to pack your patience because your child will test every last nerve you have when you're out hiking and at the worst moments. And I'm one, if you know me. I have zero patience at home. But for some reason, when we get out hiking, I have all the patience in the world. And it's the opposite for my husband. He has all the patience at home and none on the trail.
When he hikes, he wants to get to the top,
exactly.
See the view, take some pictures.
Yep.
So pack your patience.
Pack your patience.
In addition to all the other stuff.
Exactly.
On the HikeSafe website. Do you want to remind us what some of that stuff is, Mike?
Well, it'll be extra water, clothing, let's see, a flashlight in case you get caught after dark, which happens way more times than we like to
think. Especially in the fall when it gets dark suddenly so fast.
Exactly.
It's a beautiful day, but...
Yep. I still, again, like I said, I'm a map and compass guy, but if you're not a map and compass guy, at least your GPS unit or something, so you can find your way. I said extra water and clothes, lots of snacks. Kids love the snacks. You got to have that. I remember going on a school trip with the kids from Monroe up a mountain in Franconia Notch area. My niece was about six years old at the time, and if it wasn't for the school guidance counselor and his bag of gummy bears, she never would have made it to the summit. She still reminds me of that. So you got to have that. And again, you got to be prepared. Frequent stops. Kids are going to want to stop, either break or just to seeing things off the trail.
Do you want to jump in, Emma?
Sure. I think Mike and Lindsay really covered most of everything we need to bring, and people always groan when I say this these days, but I do think, you know, your phone is a really valuable tool, and it's a good safety tool to have in your bag. I often just turn mine off so I can forget about it, but I know it's there. You know, I know we don't always get service, but in the chance that we do, something goes wrong, it is a really valuable line to help if you need it.
Yeah. Well, and a little teeny first aid kit sometimes is helpful because kids do tend to fall and scrape themselves, and especially little ones, even if they have a scrape, some of them will freak out when they see blood. So it's nice just to be able to cover that up and get that calming effect of that Band-Aid on the boo-boo, so to speak. Another email comes in from Monica. She says, I am looking for a group of hikers for Saturdays. I have tried and not found one. I live in the seacoast of New Hampshire near UNH in Lee. So there's Monica looking for people to hike with. Do you want to jump in, Emma? You're on the seacoast.
Sure. I'm not familiar with specific groups of people, but I will say that Southeast Land Trust hosts, that's our local regional land trust in the seacoast, and they host several Saturday hikes. And I know I've run into folks on those hikes that are always looking to go out more. So, you know, joining a couple of those guided hikes might be a great opportunity to meet people who would be interested in hiking more. And also just getting out on the trail and chatting with people that you bump into. You never know who you might meet. And it's a great way to connect with people as well.
Mike?
Also, if you, a good way to get involved is to join some of the mountain clubs that help, like the Appalachian Mountain Club, the Randolph Mountain Club. AMC in particular, the New Hampshire chapter, is always leading guided hikes, you know, multiple times during the weekends. They might have six or seven different hikes just in the White Mountains or elsewhere in the state. So get involved with your local trail clubs or not even a local, could be one that serves the entire state. Get involved with that. They always have group hikes going on someplace.
Thanks a lot for the email, Monica. And back to the phones. Douglas is calling from where? Hi, Douglas. You're on the air. Welcome.
Yes, good morning. How are you?
Fine. Go ahead, Douglas.
Good. I was just calling in to say there's great hiking available right at the Audubon Center in Concord, New Hampshire. And another great hike that's relatively easy and actually has a little pond that you can kayak on if you'd like to carry a kayak, maybe 300 yards, is the Deering Audubon Sanctuary.
So Audubon.
Yeah.
Audubon is a source of local hiking.
Yeah. And one in Deering is a beautiful, beautiful hike around that pond. And not only that, you can stop and say hi at our son's memorial bench. It sits on the shores of the pond. And or just sit there and enjoy the views that he used to enjoy.
Well, Douglas, I'm sorry to hear about your son and how nice that you put something in a beautiful place to remember him by. He's right, Lindsay. The Audubon centers around the state offer nice, easy, but beautiful hiking. Often there's a body of water or something beautiful to look at.
I'm actually not too familiar with the Audubon because we don't have too many in the southern area. You know, I pass by the one in Concord all the time when we head north, but I've never been. So
okay.
It's one that now I'm going to put it on my list, and we will go there this summer.
Well, I do recommend it. I'm a little familiar with the Manchester one. I have not, Douglas, been to the Derry one. The Concord one was an absolute go-to place when our guys were little. Easy trails, but something fun on the trail. There was one tree that had three sort of big trunk sticking up, and the kids call it triple tree, and that was like a magic place. And then there was a rock that was skunk rock, and you always had to look out for skunks, even though there weren't really any skunks there. So it was easy and fun. There was a pond at the end. So Douglas, I'm so glad you called. That's a great resource. Patrick's calling from Manchester. Thank you, Patrick. Go ahead. You're on the air.
Thanks, Laura. I'm actually a park manager with New Hampshire State Parks, and I just wanted to make sure the audience had a correction from earlier in the show where you stated that pets were not permitted in New Hampshire state parks, and that's by and large not the case. Most state parks actually do permit pets. There are some that don't. Mount Monadnock and Monadnock State Park is certainly the one most people know about, but most state parks actually do permit them. And if people are interested in bringing their pets to state parks, if they go to nhstateparks.org, they can find out ahead of time where the pets are permitted or not permitted, but most state parks are pet friendly.
I am so glad that you called, Patrick. Now, is it maybe state beaches? Is that where dogs are not allowed? Is that how I got mixed up?
Could be, yeah, state beaches. Some beaches do allow them in the winter months, but and there are some areas. Rhododendron State Park, which is a beautiful, beautiful park down in southwest New Hampshire in Fitzwilliam. Pets are not permitted in the rhododendron grove there, but they are allowed on the trail that goes up to the peak of Little Monadnock Mountain. But again, there are certain areas where they may or may not be allowed, certain areas of state parks. But I think some state beaches and certainly that year-round pet restriction at Mount Monadnock may give people the wrong impression that state parks, by and large, are not pet-friendly. And again, that's just not necessarily the case.
Well, I'm really glad that you called, Patrick, because that's an important correction to make. So thank you very much. And a lot of the dog lovers out there will be cheering hearing you tell them that state parks are not off limits to dogs, although you should, as Patrick said, check the website first because there are some state beaches where there are some limits. Mike, last question for you. Your favorite laid-back hike?
Oh boy! I like Black Mountain in Benton. It's a little bit off the beaten track in the southwest corner of the White Mountains. Doesn't get as much traffic. I used to maintain the trail there for years, and that's one of my favorites. Got great views looking over the Connecticut River Valley.
Okay, Lindsay.
Gap Mountain, I would say, would probably be one of our favorites to hit up if we are short on time.
Yeah, it's a nice one. Yes. I've done that one, but it's been a long time, so you're inspiring me to try it again. How about you, Emma?
There's so many, but right now one of my favorites is the Oyster River Forest, which I mentioned earlier. Just a beautiful trail, very easy, and some really neat ecological features as well.
Okay. Thank you all very much for being here. I really appreciate it.
Thank you.
Thank you.
This is The Exchange on NHPR.
The views expressed in this program are those of the individuals and not those of NHPR, its Board of Trustees, or its underwriters. Hey, if you like what you heard, spread the word. Please give us a review on iTunes to help other listeners find us. And thanks.